This podcast replay is brought to you by Perdomo Cigars. Check out the retail store in Miami Gardens at 5150 Northwest 167th Street. Plenty of cigar gear and a relaxing lounge. This is the Perdomo way.
Hour number three. I didn't see anything. It was like black, so I just hit anything there.
It was playing.
No, the disclaimer was on. There was nothing playing.
It was maybe not on yours. On mine, I had the disclaimer playing, and then it went to the what you put on.
I'm like seeing nothing. I'm just seeing a black polar bear in darkness, and I'm like, what's going on? What's going on? Anyway, welcome back, Sean Stanley, mastering this program. If y'all want to get in on the Wealth and Realm text line, 855-912-1056. That's 855-912-1056. If you want to get the edge on everything going on South Florida sports, you tune in here. And if you want to get the best energy drink on the planet, you go to myedgedrink.com. 10% off the shipping anywhere you're at. So order it. Delicious, smooth, zero aftertaste. Zero aftertaste. 78 calories, too, which is a joke. So you definitely want to have a little edge energy drink. David says, Big O, I heard Miami never reached out to J.C. Treader. He's received offers from teams he doesn't want to go to. You think Greer cares more about his reputation with his garbage O-line picks? David, I personally think that you're probably an idiot for thinking that all the picks are garbage. Maybe it was the coaching that was garbage. You know, some of you out there, you may want to use a little common sense. They're hitting on all the other picks. The only picks we don't know about is Noah and Hunter because they don't play. But the old linemen were probably misguided. But if you want to think that they're all bad picks, and so he's okay, so he drafted five guys and signed a left tackle and a left guard. So two of his guys already lost positions. So out of the five guys they drafted, only three of them. But yet you think they're not signing Dieter to justify their draft picks. So that's another reason why, obviously, David, you're not a very smart football fan. So one of the two. Not sure which one is it, because they're not, you know, protecting their reputation if they went and got Armstead and Connor. If they went and got Flowers. Get what I'm saying? But you probably don't. But that's all right, David. You can create any narrative you want, bro. Big O with a stacked wide receiver room. What's the plans for Bowden? How are the Dolphins planning on using him? Rome and Penny, why don't you ask Lynn Bowden, what does he plan on doing? It's not a matter of the Dolphins. Lynn Bowden will have his opportunity to take the field and try to make an impact and force a decision upon the coaching staff. But the coaching staff is not there to cater to the young man and not try to replace him. So they brought in some stiff competition. Now it's up to Lynn Bowden Jr. to go prove himself that he can do some of the things we all think he can do. So if there's a stacked room, step up, kid. You know, it gets to a point where it's up to you now. And they were able to hide you for a year now, you know, on the injured list. Here's your opportunity. Don't screw it up. Let's see. What else do we have here? Treader's dad said Dolphins made him the best offer. I don't know what the hell to believe in any of this crap. All I know is the guy's still out there and he must be asking for too much money. Something like that must be going on. A couple of ex-Saints in the news. First of all, let's start off with Sean Payton. Sean Payton has agreed to broadcast for Fox this offseason. So it just came across the wire. Sean will join Fox in 2022, per a source with knowledge of the situation. The Super Bowl winning coach will work in studio with Fox throughout 2022. It's believed that he'll join the Fox NFL Sunday crew on off days for Jimmy Johnson. Many believe it's a one-year foray for Payton. He nearly became the Miami coach. This is Pro Football Talk talking earlier this year, and what would have been a partnership with Tom Brady. I don't think any of that ever got close, but it's nice, you know. It's good for him to justify it, since he kept trying to justify the whole Watson thing, and obviously they flopped there. And the other one, and here's where it just, we now get to the silliness and the ridiculous. So Saints legend Drew Brees hung up his cleats last March, accepted a job with NBC. This weekend, the New York Post reported Brees would not be working for NBC in 22, leading the former quarterback to head to Twitter and address his future. Though he said reports were not accurate, he added that returning to the field was a possibility. He said, despite speculation from media about my future this fall, I'm currently undecided, Brees tweeted. I may work for NBC. I may play football again. I may focus on business and philanthropy. I may train for the pickleball tour, senior golf tour, coach my kids, all of the above. I'll let you know. It says, my wife's the one that told me about it because I don't follow social media, Allen says. So I thought, well, that's interesting. They'll bring up some questions tomorrow at the golf tournament. But yeah, certainly. I think it was a comment made in jest. We certainly haven't had any conversations in that regard. So here's what I would say. He's not coming back to football. Okay. I think he threw that out there to have some fun with it and all that good stuff. The worst thing that Drew Brees could do is try to come back to football. The league has already made its decision, most of these teams, on what quarterbacks they're going to go with. The only guy that probably would have coached him would have been Sean Payton, and he's not in the league right now. And everybody saw his arm was falling off last year. Okay? It happens. Father Time is undefeated. There's going to be a point in time that I will not be able to do this show the way I do it every single day, the way I've done it for 32 years with the energy that I bring every single day. It might be 5 years from now. It might be 10 years from now. It might be 15. But Father Time is undefeated. It gets to a point where you can't do what you love to do. And I don't care if you're an artist. I don't care if you're an athlete. I don't care if you're a teacher, a broadcaster, a lawyer, you name it. The time, the sands of the hourglass are always running on all of us. And we just don't know when that last grain of sand is going to come. And when it does, that's when they come a-calling for us. And we can't do the things that we used to do. Drew Brees cannot play like he used to play. Father Time came and went. He's done. Okay? He might go back to NBC. He might coach his kids. He might play on the senior tour. He might do a lot of things. The one he's not going to do, I can guarantee you of that, is play in the NFL. Because all he's going to do is embarrass himself and sully a career that has been absolutely exceptional. So I saw Joe Namath in a Rams uniform. I don't need to see it. I watched Willie Mays in a Mets uniform. Don't need to see it. I saw Sugar Ray Leonard hang on too long. Don't need to see it. Saw Muhammad Ali hang on too long. And my Lord, you wonder if there would have been a difference in his life if he didn't hang on as long as he did and end up with Parkinson's. I've seen athletes in all sports hang on too long. Jaromir Jagr was hanging on too long. It's a novelty. It's nice. I get it. But there's a time and a place for everything. That time and place is gone for Drew Brees. So It was a fun post. It might get people talking in New Orleans, you know, but let's just be logical here as fans. Drew Brees' time has come and gone. It's over. And you had a great run, my man. An absolutely great run. All right, 855-912-1056. That's 855-912-1056 if you want to get in on the program. Marlins, by the way, lose to the Brewers last night. 7-3. The Marlins have now dropped to 15-19 on the season. They are 3-11 in their last 14 games. Are you listening to me? The Marlins are 3-11 in their last 14 games. Not good. 6:40 tonight. You know what is good? The 12-24 Nationals. They're in town. So that's the panacea for a bad team, that an even more disgusting team is coming to town in the Nationals. They're 12-24. You're 15-19. Win the series at least, my man. Win the series. Sandy Alcantara. We got no Marlins. I mean, we got no Heat and no Panthers tonight. You can focus a little bit on the Marlins and enjoy Sandy out there. He is one terrific pitcher. He's 2-2 with a 2.74 ERA. I just wish these youngins had a little more run support. Inter Miami tied DC United over the weekend. 2-2. Leo Campana rang that bell again in the 31st minute. Lowe got the second goal in the 45th. Wednesday, they're at Philadelphia at 7:30. And Sunday, they're home against the Red Bulls at 6 o'clock. Hell of a week for Inter. And not a good season, obviously, for Inter, too. You know, I will say this. The game on Saturday was pretty good. They played a pretty good game. You know, they're not winning much, and they're not going to win a lot of people over in South Florida. I do like watching these young guys play. They are more entertaining. It wasn't a bad game, man. Although I got desperate at the end. They had to go to Higuain. When they brought Higuain off the bench, I'm like, oh, my God. It's like Higuain is like a – I don't know. It's just one of those things that's like – you don't look forward to it. It's like when they call his name, it's, do you have to? Do you need to? Must you play him? You know, that kind of stuff. That's kind of how I felt. Were you watching the game at all, Sean? Yeah. Just out of curiosity, when Higuain is calling, when they're calling for Higuain and he's warming up to come in, what's the feeling you get? Like, is it like something like, really? Do we have to? Am I the only one thinking like that? Do you think like that at all?
I don't know necessarily that I thought that, but I was like, oh boy, this right. is going to slow down. It's like
liability.
Watching right. paint dry. It's just, you right. watch what you saw in the first half and you know, when he comes on, everything just slows down.
Yeah.
It slows yeah. down so much. I can see the plays forming. Right. And I know nothing about soccer.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's just bad, man. Just bad. God. So I told you, man, Panthers and Inter are the two teams that I desperately want to see them have so much success. And the Panther ownership has done their job. You know what I mean? And I know Inter wants to. I know the owner definitely wants to, but his hands are tied now. After all the screw-ups, they're just limited in what they can do because those rules are so weird there in the MLS. No flexibility. Bowden could carve out a jack-of-all-trades niche in our offense. Well, it's up to him, man. It's up to him. The vanguards of manhood say the last Pro Bowl O-lineman we drafted was Jake Long in 08. I won't include Tunsil as he's never made it as a Dolphin. Didn't Mike Pouncey get drafted and make it to the Pro Bowl, my man? After? Jake Long? Anyway, JC, being a vet, doesn't want to do training camp and go through the grind. He could sign closer to the season. Maybe Isais. Keith C. Brown says, Big O is not a shy, unopinionated man. No, yeah, I struggle with opinions at times, yes. Big O should be a fun series. Good luck to your cats. Thank you, sir. Mob Rule says, how many seasons can Tom Brady take from the father time? Seems to be the exception to the rule. There's always one, Mob Rule. You know, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar played for a long time, dude. Long time. Now, he had a shot that was unstoppable. And by the way, I don't know how somebody hadn't learned it again. I don't know how a big man hasn't gone to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and say, teach me the skyhook, please. Please teach me the skyhook. That's the only shot that cannot be defended. There's no way a 6'10", 7-foot guy is getting that shot blocked ever. How has nobody learned that? Don't get it. Don't get it. But anyway, every once in a while, there's those guys that they're able to play longer than most, and you just can't answer it, man. What's Julio Franco, right? Was the guy for baseball, right? Remember, Julio Franco was always in shape, and he played to like 40-something years old, and then he started playing in some, like, in his country or something, like, right, or something like that, or I think it's the Winter League or whatever in Puerto Rico that he would still play it to, and he's like 87 years old now and he's still playing or something. You know, some guys are like that, man. They're freaks. And Tom Brady's that freak. Just some guys are like that. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was that freak. And it's like, wow, the old man is still playing. Yeah, but you can't stop that stupid skyhook. It's amazing to me. Yeah, at least Magic, like, you watch that series, and in real life, Magic did develop the baby hook. And it's like, Magic was super smart, man. You know, like, yeah, let me steal that from Kareem. Nobody ever stole it back from Kareem ever. And all we ever do is steal. We can't make new music, except we got to repeat it. We can't make new shows. We got to repeat them. We can't make new movies. We got to repeat them. We got to make sequels to all of them because we have no creativity. You would figure that in the world of a lack of creativity, nobody has been smart enough to go say, hey, that Kareem Abdul-Jabbar guy, you had a shot that nobody could stop. Teach me how to Dougie. Teach me how to Dougie. Come on. Oh, Big O, did you see the video of Tyreek at Tua's house scared of the dog? Yeah. Yeah, I saw it. When you're not a dog guy, you're not a dog guy. You know what I'm saying? It's a difference. It's dogs can be intimidating, right? Some of us love dogs. So we like, I'm the guy that gravitates to any dog in the house. Now, if it's one of those junkyard dogs that's just like, you know, going to eat my head off of it, obviously, all right, you've drawn the line in the sand. You have told me you don't want me to pet you. We will give you no love. We will respect your space. But if there's a dog in the house, you're going to see me around that dog and petting that dog. Whosever dog it is, again, unless it's a junkyard dog that you just, you know, come on. I will teach you how to Dougie, says, yes. Thank you, Dougie. You know how to Dougie because you are Dougie Fresh. So you need how to teach me how to Dougie. Teach me how to Dougie. Dogs just know when you are not a dog person. Tyreek has dogs himself. He ain't afraid. You know, he didn't want to get close, that's for sure. Yeah, sometimes you just respect it. Big O, you are so right about the skyhook. It's playing young players. It's every player's laziness. Because this is 40 years that nobody bothers. It's the weirdest thing in the world how nobody's gone to that guy and say, please, dude, teach me how to do this. I mean, bam. With his talent, learn that skyhook. All right, you're not going to be a great offensive player. All right, well, learn the skyhook around the paint, man. I don't get it. Michael says Tua was standing in front of a golf simulator in his house in the Hill video. Surprised some haven't ran away with that narrative. Can't wait till he balls out this year. Bam needs to learn that skyhook. He needs a move. Somebody's got to learn it. So, Caddyshack goes, Michael Cody, don't tell people that. Isaiah goes, Junkyard Dog. Wow, it took me back to WWF days. Junkyard Dog. Who was the Junkyard Dog there, Sean? In the WWF days that Isaiah is talking about. Who's the Junkyard Dog?
That was Thump. He used to have Thump on the back of his tights all the time.
Okay.
But he was, he was awesome. He was a fan favorite. He was Louisiana area and everything else. And then he got into big break with WWE. And then unfortunately passed away tragically.
Oh, that sucks. All right. The Junkyard Dog. All right. Interesting.
Came to the ring with a chain and everything.
Okay.
And he did the little move with the, you know how the, I don't know what the dance move is. You know, the knees going in and out. He used to get on the ring.
Oh, the Billy White Shoes Johnson one?
Maybe. He did that on the ring rope, on the apron. That was kind of his intro.
Billy White Shoes Johnson scored a touchdown. He would do that, you know, crossing over the legs with his hands and all. Yeah,
he didn't do the hands part, but he did the legs, and then he did the barking because he's the Junkyard Dog.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I remember Billy White Shoes Johnson, Houston Oilers, Billy White Shoes Johnson. That was classic.
Yeah, he also came out to Another One Bites the Dust. So,
oh,
as they pointed out in the.
Okay. Big O, Bam could do well with Tim Duncan's 15-foot bank shot also. There's no reason for Bam to be this limited on offense. Well, it's not his thing. It's just not his thing. Kareem learned to shoot the hook shot while I was in grade school using a drill made popular by George Mikan. All I know is it's the greatest shot in the history of mankind because it is absolutely unstoppable. If a big man learns that, there's no way of getting around it. No one jumps that high in order to meet the ball before it meets its peak because of the way you're separated from the defender. Your body, your shoulder, and then your this long arm of yours is going over like there's no way you reach it. It was an indefensible play that Kareem created. And the most baffling thing in the world is that nobody's been enlightened to say, hey, maybe I should learn that shot. Wow, that's a really good shot. That's interesting. That can't be defended. Damn, I'm 6'10", 6'11", 7 foot, 7'1", 7'2". I'm Rudy Gobert. Who the hell is going to block my shot? I'm Bam Adebayo. How would you be able to stop that if I came up with it? And yet, still, nobody can do it. Guy did it from the baseline. Guy did it from the top of the key. Guy did it from any angle, he made that shot. You would figure that shot would have been like normal now. Like, it would have been part of playground, you know, lore. Like, it would have been something that even kids were learning also. Magic was the only guy that had the brains to say, yeah, let me add it to my repertoire. And Magic wasn't a great, Magic was never a great offensive scorer. Like, no, I shouldn't say that, because he scored around the basket. He was a scorer. He wasn't a great shooter. He wasn't a volume shooter, right? He was a guy that could kill you around the boards, obviously, because his driving and passing and rebounding and layups and all that kind of stuff, he could do that with ease. But, man, he developed a little three-point shot that was kind of like a shot put. It wasn't a pretty three-point shot. But again, to Magic's credit, you know, Jason Kidd did the same thing too. Jason Kidd wasn't a great shooter, but he honed his skills enough that he became a threat from three-point range, because he learned how to be an efficient three-point shooter, enough to be a threat, enough that you had to respect Jason Kidd. He was never going to be Steph Curry. He was never going to be Klay Thompson. He's never going to be any of these great three-point shooters, Dale Ellis, whatever. But he did it enough that you had to respect it. Magic developed a little three-point shot that you had to have respect. He'd come running down and everybody would be already in the paint. Magic would stop, boom, right from the top of the three, and that little shot put that he had. And he would make it. And then he developed a little baby hook, and he would make that. Because he wasn't Mr., you know, he wasn't Bernard King. You know, he wasn't going to be the poet in the air like Bernard King. You know what I'm saying? So it's different. He wasn't going to be Michael. He wasn't going to be any of those kind of guys. So he had to add to his repertoire. And I give Magic a lot of credit how he was able to kind of steal a couple of things to help himself become a better offensive player. He's the greatest point guard I have ever seen in my life. But to his credit, he said, nah, I got to add a baby hook. I got to add a three-point shot. I got to make – and he is great. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer that didn't need a baby hook and didn't need to improve his three-point shot, but yet great players still finding a way to become better. And I give Magic a lot of credit for that, and how no one else in the league has gone to say, yeah, that hook stuff, I need to do that. It's crazy. All right, let's switch gears. Let's talk a little football. Miami Dolphins, baby. And let's get an edge, talking a little Miami Dolphins football with our Edge energy drink, Miami Dolphins Report, with Marcel Louis Jacques.
Time to get the edge on the Miami Dolphins with our Edge energy drink, Miami Dolphins Report. When you want the energy drink that's delicious and smooth with zero aftertaste, you can only order Edge energy drink at myedgedrink.com. That's myedgedrink.com. Here's the ESPN Dolphin Insider, Marcel Louis Jacques.
All righty. How you doing, man? Doing good?
I'm doing wonderful, man. I'm doing wonderful. Like I told you on Thursday, we're back here on Monday. We got an idea of what life looks like in the fall. Beautiful outside. Felt nice. Just took the dog out for a lap. You know, just typical Miami living.
That's right. But, hey, listen, if you want, we can ship your ass out back to Buffalo for the winter.
Oh, I got to respond to that. My bad. I thought you were talking to yourself. That's on me. My poor communication. My bad. No, we'll be back in Buffalo. Let me see what the date is. I have the calendar pulled up here.
Don't even depress yourself with that. Don't worry about it.
Oh no, I love a Buffalo trip. I love going there when it's cold outside. I get to dust off my peacoat collection. I get to break the turtleneck out, you know, the high top J's and everything. Like, I love it, man.
For a weekend. We understand you work there, so you have to, you know, you know, give them a little love, and that's fine. No, but listen, all seriousness, prayers and lots of love and support to everybody in Buffalo, man, because a rough weekend this weekend in Buffalo, man. Just some unacceptable shit that went on, and just the kind of stuff that there's no place for it in our society. So all kidding aside, and we have some fun with Buffalo and all that stuff, but Buffalo strong down here for everybody, man, and support to all the people up there, because that was just unacceptable.
Yeah, I was going to steer the conversation after that last note either way. But yeah, man, like I said, I'll always love Buffalo, man. That was in this career I've moved a lot. I had not stayed anywhere longer than a year before I got to Buffalo, and I was there for 2 years, which felt like a lifetime considering kind of this nomadic lifestyle I'd adopted. But it's a community that means well. Of course, it has its problems. One of which, you know, it is the fact that it had one grocery store serving a gerrymandered, redlined Black community. And the fact that it's so well known that a man was able to drive 3.5 hours, 4 hours to take advantage of that fault. There's faults in every community, so don't get me wrong, but it's still a good community. It's still a group of people who, for the most part, really care about each other, really look out for each other. You know,
we have a lot of listeners in that area, actually.
It's a fan base that has become famous for raising money for other communities' charities and other players' charities. And so and it's one that doesn't shy away from doing it for its own people. So, you know, I like the support that I've seen from within Buffalo. It hurt to see that wasn't my Tops per se, but Tops was my favorite grocery store over there. It was probably about 10 minutes away from where I used to live. So, you know, I don't particularly know anybody that was personally affected by it. I do know people who shop there, and I do know people who avoided going there that day by a matter of, you know, an hour or less. So it was a hard day, man. It was hard to see that.
It's a hard weekend, bro. Milwaukee, Laguna Woods, California, and Buffalo. You know, it was a hard weekend overall in America because the East, the Midwest, and the West were all affected seriously by gun violence. So it was.
Isn't it wild that it's something that happens so frequently and so widely in this country that, you know, I roll my eyes at the what about this shooting? What about this incident? I hate whataboutism, but it is crazy that it happens so frequently that we can legitimately miss major life-changing events for a community just because, you know, oh, there was another shoot. Oh, I didn't see about Houston because I was looking at Los Angeles. So I didn't see LA because I was still concerned about Milwaukee. I didn't see Milwaukee because I'm still reading about Buffalo. Like it's this constant cycle here, man. And I feel like there should be some kind of case study, some sort of psychological review on our citizens, because I really feel like we are more numb to it than we should be.
As it continues to happen, that numbing effect comes with it, unfortunately, because it's no longer, you know, oh my God, this never happens. No, now school shootings happen like all the time now. So it just kind of becomes norm. But the reality that has set in for all of us is you're not safe anywhere. And that's the thing that has come to light, that it doesn't matter where you're at, doesn't matter what part of the country it's at, what part of the world.
Real quick, there's something
at any time, everywhere.
There's something we got to address in these comments that, you know, we miss life-changing events by the mainstream media, or we don't hear about it because news likes to pick and choose which shootings they cover. How the hell do y'all think that you hear about these things if it's not for local media? Like local media does not get the credit that it deserves for its coverage of these events. Now, granted, the CNNs and the Fox Newses and the MSNBCs of the world, they might not pick up on every event, but like, I just hate when local media is looped in to mainstream media like that, because they do an incredible job of covering their communities. It's not a matter of picking and choosing. So it's just like, people will post, I see people post like videos of local news reports and say like, why is there no coverage of this? Well, that is the coverage. Like, this is the coverage. Like, I don't know. It's baffling, but like, no, man, like mainstream media is not trying to, control your message like that, man. Like it just.
Oh, no. I mean, the none of those stories were politically driven. It was just twisted people and terrible situations, and that's it. And they were all covered the same way. I watched it all weekend on different news channels anyways, and a lot of local channels actually, because that's what I love about YouTube, man. I'm able to watch local channels all over the country, including like Buffalo stations and things like that, that I was able to watch directly, to watch the coverage in Laguna, to watch the coverage in Milwaukee, to watch the coverage in Buffalo. I watched a lot of it through the local channels there in each of them.
So. And it's like, we live, this is 2022. It's a different world than, let's say, the 1980s, where you needed to rely on the mainstream media in order to get news from around the country. You don't need to do that anymore. You can easily watch a Milwaukee, like you just said, you can easily watch a Milwaukee or a Buffalo local station from Miami. You can watch it from your phone. Like, you don't have to, like, like I said, it's just kind of a tired argument to blame the mainstream media, because, like, do you really need the mainstream media? Like, you're making the conscious decision to watch a national network. You could easily hop on your phone, Google Buffalo. And
I have like on my, I don't know, for those of you that watch, like, I'm a big YouTube TV buff. I love YouTube TV, and I'm signed on. Like, I go through all the major cities and I sign on to all their local affiliates. So on my feed, when it comes in general, I'll start getting headlines from all over the place. It doesn't matter where it's at. And I'm always getting all the local channels from, it doesn't matter if it's Sacramento or if it's Austin, Texas, or if it's Buffalo, or if it's, you know, whatever, you know, in North Carolina, Boone, North Carolina, it's whatever local TV channel, I'll get the headlines from that area. You know what I mean? And so it's pretty cool.
If you do the watch
those local broadcasts.
Yeah, just do the little, you know, do the little work. You got to kind of, you got to put in a little work yourself sometimes, but like, yeah, it's not going to be spoon-fed to you by, like, CNN is not going to do, CNN is just simply not going to tell the stories of your community or specific communities better than the community itself. So, like, if it's really a concern to you that, like, the mainstream news isn't covering anything, if your concern is that you are not being properly, I guess, acquiesced to the situation, then you are going to have to go do the work yourself. Like, if the problem is that you don't feel informed enough, inform yourself. Like, find the conversation. Like, these stories are being covered. You know how many DMs and replies I got? You know how many, of course, but what about Chicago's? Have you heard about this? What about the Christmas parade that got crashed into? That wasn't covered at all.
And I was watching this weekend in Chicago. All the kids were going crazy in that square. And so now Lightfoot just put a curfew in Chicago for everybody under 18. By 11 o'clock, you're gone. You can't be out in the street. And if you're not out with an adult, it's not going to be good for you, because they had a whole bunch of kids in the middle of the street over the weekend. They were just kicking and hitting cars as they were driving by. And so, But again, that's me watching all kinds of local channels all over the place, so I can.
Even if you go on Google, you're reading what a reporter wrote. I kind of think I see what you're trying to say, but that's how it works, my boy. Like somebody's got coverage. Somebody's gonna cover it. The trick is, like, you're gonna have to read multiple stories. You're gonna have to read multiple stories from multiple outlets, because while a lot of the same information is generally going to be the same, you know, some outlet might have talked to somebody that another one didn't. And that's how you piece it together yourself. But I think my main point is, like, media in general gets a lot of blame for lack of coverage or lack of comprehensive coverage when people aren't taking personal responsibility to go out and do any of the work themselves. Like, either you're not taking responsibility for not having read enough on any particular subject, because there are very few stories around, like, major stories like this that don't get covered into the dirt. man, like that don't get covered to death. Like you just have to go, you just have to put in a little bit of effort, like a minuscule amount. Of effort to do it. But yeah, got a little sidetracked. Like I'm still, you know, I'm of course I'm sports. I made a conscious decision to go into sports instead of news for a reason. But
yeah, but I can't bring you on as a Buffalo reporter and not talk about what happened in Buffalo. And I don't want to avoid also what happened in Buffalo or Laguna or Milwaukee, because obviously it's not something that we should avoid. It's something that we should discuss, unfortunately. All right, let me segue into football now. The Melvin Ingram move. Your thoughts on that one? Because I love the move, personally.
You can never have too many receivers, and you can never have too many pass rushers. And this obviously falls into the latter. When you look at Miami's pass rush rotation, they're the most aggressive unit in the league in terms of, you know, blitz rate. I think they were a tenth of a percentage behind Tampa Bay, but they really only have three main edge rushers, which is it's Ogbetts, Van Ginkle, and now it's Jalen Phillips. And then, you know, they might use send Landon Roberts, but then there's a reason why Javon Holland and specifically Brandon Jones get set so often, because they don't really have that rotation. They didn't really have that rotation on the edge. This adds quality depth to that rotation. So now in the fourth quarter, you know, no longer those three guys kind of tired. Now in the fourth quarter, you've got Melvin Ingram coming at you when your line is tired, and Jalen Phillips on the other side, or maybe it's Emmanuel Agba on the other side. Maybe they could bounce. Maybe they might have Melvin Ingram inside. Like, there's so many different things that they can do.
Right, Phillips on the inside, you could have actually, and Ingram and the other kid who am I missing now on the outside. So you can mix it up now, you know, overall. That's this scary part too, if you really want to get after people.
Yeah, it's like I said, you can never have too many pass rushers. I'm really excited for I don't think we're really going to see too much of it in OTA starting on Tuesday, but really excited for the summer and the preseason to see what kind of combinations we get on that defensive line in pass rush situations and see how that impacts their coverage. If they don't have to use Brandon Jones as a pass rusher anymore, if they can use him more in the box, if they can use him more to drop back, I think it's just going to add so many more looks that this defense is going to throw at offenses. And I just think it's the move. It's one of the bigger moves of the offseason, and they've made a lot of big ones, but not really on the defensive side of the ball, to be quite honest. This was, besides, I think it's Keon Crossan, this is their only defensive signing that really comes to mind. This is the only major addition that comes to mind. So, you know, they needed that
They had to focus on the offense, which that was really the priority, which makes a lot of sense. And this is kind of icing on the cake moves for the defense.
Like it's what I think we should probably talk about more. And obviously everybody's focus is on the offensive side of the ball. That's why they hire the offensive-minded coach. That's why they trade for Tyreek Hill and they make all these additions. But they're doing a lot of this under the assumption that defense keeps up its level of play from the second half of last season. Like, that is still a catalyst to this year. Because if that defense still plays like we saw at weeks 1 through 7 last year to start the year, I mean, they've got New England, Baltimore, Buffalo, Cincinnati to start the season. If the defense is bullshitting, that's 0-4 to start the year, and all of a sudden you're in a hole. You can't be in a hole in the AFC this year. So they needed to make as many bolstering moves as possible on defense. It couldn't just be re-sign our own guys. Like, you got to find a way to improve in one way or another. I think that they do that by adding Melvin Ingram, a motivated Melvin Ingram.
What grade did you give the Dolphins this offseason?
Oh, we are – it's an A in climbing. Man, it's an A in climbing. They addressed every need. They addressed even positions that weren't necessarily a need. They addressed it with excess. They got quality playmaking star power on both sides of the ball. I love the coaching moves. Like, I don't have a complaint about any spot on that coaching staff. They didn't do anything drastic to overcompensate for a need. I thought that the money that they gave to Teron Armstead is fair compensation for the best free agent on the market and one of the best left tackles in the league. I thought the trade compensation for Tyreek Hill, I mean, I do it 9 times out of 5. Like, this was, like I said, a first and a second. I'm going to damn about a third, fourth, fifth, whatever round pick. Don't care. I don't care. Because basically, I mean, you're saying, okay, we traded a fourth string right guard from Middle Tennessee State for Tyreek Hill. Yeah, have four of them. Respectfully, have four of them for Tyreek Hill. Like, it's an A and it's climbing. Now, I think it's going to get an A with a little bit of asterisk. It's incomplete until we see what Mike McDaniel and his staff can actually do on the football field. You know, it's a temporary A until we find out what their scheme is, how they've built chemistry this offseason. Do players respond to him in the face of adversity? I want to see them get down by two scores, and I want to see how the team reacts, things like that. So it's a tentative A, but on paper, yeah, man, like, this is one of the better offseasons in the NFL.
All right, so I'm going to ask you a question that you really can't answer based on full-out facts. You might have a taste of a fact, a piece of a fact, a little piece of a nugget, but most of it is probably going to be answered on your gut, okay? Because you can't prove all of the stuff that went on in the past. So I ask you this. In prior off seasons, there were things that happened at one point, and then it was a yin and then a yang. Well, wait a minute. You're going to sign Kyle Van Noy, but then you're going to cut him right after the following year? You're going to sign Flowers, and then you're going to have to be forced to trade him right away? Malcolm Brown, you thrust him in like he's going to be your starting guy over some of the other guys, and then now is he even in the picture now? You know, there were things at times that you just wondered what was going on. Did it seem to you that this offseason was an offseason that there was no interruptions? That it seemed like the front office just flowed and did what they had to do and didn't have to check with somebody or have somebody check them on a consistent basis? Again, not something you can go on a lot of a proof, but you might have to go on a little bit more gut and feel. What did you think about this Dolphin offseason compared to the prior two off seasons?
I mean, I wasn't necessarily here for either of the two prior off seasons. Obviously, I was up in Buffalo, as we know. I mean, this offseason didn't come without any hiccups. There's a massive lawsuit and a coaching search, which, I mean, you almost forget that there was an entire coaching search. You almost forget about the lawsuit because of how many
events. Lawsuit has nothing to do with personnel.
I'm just saying, you almost forget how
about football moves. I'm not talking about anything.
I'll get there. I'm saying you almost forget that it happened because of the volume of things from a football perspective that have happened, the volume of moves and trades and signings. And it was just stream of consciousness right there. But I mean, they got a late start to free agency. I remember that up to the major moves of free agency. Obviously, they re-signed Agba, and they bring in Connor Williams and Mostert and Edmonds, and you know, everybody, myself included, said, okay, like, it's fine. These moves are fine. I'm not mad at them. They're not pushing you over the edge. Like, the Raiders are getting Davante Adams and you're getting, you know, Cedric Wilson, respectfully. That's not pushing you over the edge. But then that second week, that's when we really started to see it pick up. So it felt like there was probably a deliberate plan.
They're a patient and deliberate front office. They're not a desperate front office. They don't play that game.
I can appreciate the fact that, like I said before, when you asked me to grade the Dolphins offseason, they didn't make hasty moves. They didn't make desperate moves. They didn't overpay. They didn't overcompensate out of desperation. So, I love what they've done from top to bottom this offseason. I just want to – now I want to see it on the field. You know, I'm not I can say – I love what they did without being like, okay, Super Bowl or bust. That's it. This is it. Like, I've seen all I need to see. No, like, let's not cap here. I still need to see it come together on the field. And like I said before, like, I really want to see how this team responds. Everything is cool when, you know, again, respectfully, everything is cool when it's no pressure and you've got your coaches rocking Yeezys and a bust down watch at practice with Ray-Bans. Like, it's easy to have fun in games and smile and all that. I want to see what happens if this team is on a two-game losing streak heading into Thursday night football against the Bengals. I want to see what happens when they get down two scores in the first half.
That's like, something
I want to see how they react to their coach in adversity.
That's all something else. Did it seem like this was an unabridged offseason for them? Did it seem like they were able to work at their pace and they weren't really? In other words, it didn't seem like Mike McDaniel was in the middle of the way of anything, pretty much.
No, I think, like I said, I've said it before, he and Chris Greer were like an old buddy cop video over there at the draft. It seems like they worked well together. He said during his introductory press conference that a major reason he wanted to come here is for the ability to work with Chris Greer. Stephen Ross gave us the little chain of command during that same press conference that, you know, he works under Greer. Greer kind of answers to Stephen Ross, or Greer and Tom Garfinkel answer to Stephen Ross. Like, there's a clear little chain of command there. I think the feng shui looks nice so far. But, you know, what I'm saying is, like, we won't be able to tell who was getting in whose way because shit is still sweet right now. We're still in the honeymoon phase. They haven't touched the football field in any real capacity yet. They do it on, I believe it's Monday it starts. Tuesday we get access, or Tuesday it starts and we get access same day. Well, it doesn't matter. Like, they haven't really had any competition yet. They haven't had real football yet. So it's hard to say. But I think that you don't hire an offensive guru and you don't let him, you know, bring all this offensive-minded staff if you don't give him a say in the type of personnel he needs. So I think Mike even made a joke. It was deadpan, and so you kind of had to be there to really laugh. But he's like, yeah, you know, clearly Chris didn't think I was good enough of a coach to coach the team as constructed. So he had to go out and give me all these good players, like, obviously joking. But it seems like Greer is giving him every chance to succeed. He's given him everything he needs to succeed here.
Follow him on Twitter at Marcel_LJ. And of course you can catch him twice a week here so you can get the edge, right? All you got to do is go to myedgedrink.com, get 10% off the shipping there. Myedgedrink.com, the most delicious, smooth and zero aftertaste, the best energy drink on the planet. Marcel, before I let you go, what are you working on at ESPN so Dolphin fans can check you out?
I'm getting my football hat back on, man. Now it's time for overanalyzing season. We got OTAs coming up. It's time to let y'all know who's practicing where, who's not getting reps, who's looking good, who's somebody to watch, who's a cut candidate, all of that. Speculation season, my guy. That's what we're working on here. Plus, got a couple other features under my belt that I'm hoping to pump out by the end of the summer. But we are starting to get back into actual football, man. And I could not be happier, could not be more excited to get back into that. You know, the F1 break was fun. All the little mundane off-season events were fun. But now it's time to get back to the matter at hand.
There you go. Follow him on Twitter at Marcel_LJ and catch his work there at ESPN and twice a week here with our Edge Energy Drink Miami Dolphins Report. Marcel, as always, thank you, my friend. Appreciate you.
Yes, sir. See you Thursday.
You got it. There he is. Marcel Louis Jacques.
You now have the edge on the Miami Dolphins with the Edge Energy Drink Miami Dolphins Report featuring ESPN's Marcel Louis Jacques. Get the energy drink that's delicious and smooth with zero aftertaste. You can only order Edge Energy Drink at myedgedrink.com. That's myedgedrink.com.
Says Big O, I'm a little bit behind on the show. I must chime in to say that unfortunately, it's absolutely not the same watching a game later knowing that the result, opposed to watching it live. And the point is, Nelson, or the guy with two first names, what's the difference in your life a year later or 10 years later? You saw the game anyways. What's the difference? Are you any better because you saw Notre Dame and Miami live? And I went to go see a concert, and then I saw Notre Dame in Miami after. What's the difference? I saw the game. So did you. Who gives a shit? What, do you want a brownie? Because you watched it live, and I watched it a couple hours later. Here, I'll give you a brownie. What do you need? You need some points? Is your life incomplete? 5 years later, you're going to feel less of yourself because you didn't see it live? Seriously? Is that going to affect your world? Is that how sad you are as a human being? Listen, I have a life. Maybe some of you don't. But if I have a chance at a concert and a game is going on, I'll record the game, I'll go see the concert, and I'll watch the game, and I'll enjoy both. But if you think going to watch a game live, oh, I've got to watch it live or not, and miss out on the concert, I feel bad for you, some of you. I really do. I think if you choose that, if you're missing out on something in life, I don't care what it is, a great event, because you have to watch this sporting event live, and you can record it and watch it later, which is not going to do anything for you. But if you have to watch this and you have to miss this event, whatever it is, a friend's wedding, a great concert, an amazing, I don't know, play, whatever, you name it. I don't know. It's a once in a, it's a thing you can't see again. I feel bad for you, dude. Seriously. I like I got to label you this, like an effing loser, bro. Really? You're a loser. Oh no, I got to go see the game. I'm not going to go to the concert. The concert's once in a lifetime. The game can be recorded. But my God, your life is that much better because you saw Notre Dame in Miami live. And I watched it a couple hours later after the Buckingham and McVie concert. Really? You know, I'm just saying, if that affects your world that much, I feel sorry for you, man. I feel sorry for you, actually. If they need a proven center to compete or backup Dieter, they should use that cap room to sign Treader as long as physically he's good. Well, what I like is that they're waiting to sign him on their price, not his. That's what it looks like to me. Marcel's avoiding he kind of, that's why I had to like, you know, so I had to kind of like, yo, wait a minute, hold on, you know. I'm a football junkie, season ticket holder for the Finns, and I record all the home games I attend and rewatch the TV broadcast after coming home from the stadium. Also watch all 22 a day later. Well, there you go. You can watch it later, bro. If you got a concert, go to the concert. You can watch the game later. That has nothing to do with any of that. Can I get laid now or after the game? See, I get laid first, record the game, watch it later. That's also more important. Live is worse because you mostly likely cannot rewind and really break it down if you want to. It doesn't matter, bro. You watched it live. You can break it down and go backwards and fall behind a little bit and then catch up later, catch up at halftime, catch up in commercial breaks. What's the big deal? My Lord. Some of you make this thing out to be bigger than what it is. Give me a break. You're still watching it. Who cares? Oh, man. Too funny. Too funny. What else do we have here? Yeah, I don't think we have anything else that I must address. What other centers would you like? I don't know of any other center that I would sign outside of Treader, man. That's it. But I know he's got the knee issues, so I'm sure they're trying to protect themselves on that deal. It's probably what's going on. And that's the only thing I can think of. You know? Do you see that Nike may not re-sign Kyrie Irving? I mean, really, do you want that flake to represent your company in any way, shape, or form? Because I mean, that's what he is. He's a flake. Let's just call things like we see it, right? The animal in Buffalo is, he's not crazy. He's just an evil dude, and he needs to pay the price for being evil and hatred, right? Let's just call it like we see it, all right? And Kyrie Irving is nothing but, you know, a goof, a fool. So Kyrie's Nike shoes deal may come to an end. Adrian Wojnarowski says that the Nike was planning to part ways with Kyrie after their current deal expires. Kyrie has had one of Nike's most popular and profitable signature shoes, but uncertainty surrounding his NBA future leave Nike unlikely to extend him to a similar signature deal beyond next season. Okay. He has some decisions to make on his own. We're looking for guys that want to be something bigger than themselves. Play team basketball, be available. That goes for Kyrie and everybody here, said Sean Marks, former Miami Heat and current general manager of theirs, which he was also talking about that. So it's getting to a point where the Nets finally figured out, hey, Kyrie, shit or get off the pot. Nike saying, hey, shit or get off the pot. Hey, Kyrie. Don't be such a little bitch. Grow up. Compartmentalize, baby. Okay? Crap is happening all over the world. You got your job to do. You have your responsibilities. All right? And not taking the vaccine is ridiculous. I don't care. Outside of a health stance, there was no other reason not to take the vaccine. Okay? Vaccines have been around for 100 years. We've been taking them since we were kids. And we've got all kinds of reasons why we've taken vaccines. Take the damn vaccine. You could have been there for your team this year. And maybe you would have been a better team. In the end, I don't care. You helped out the Miami Heat. And that's fine by me. I got no problem with that. But if I'm Nike, why would I want to associate with that flake? If I'm the Nets, why would I want to count on that flake? He's not reliable. That's all. And basketball isn't important to him. His teammates aren't important to him. The game isn't important to him. His responsibilities are not important to him. And I don't care what he does on the philanthropal end, if that's even a word. All right? I don't care. And I know he's done lots of things, but so do a lot of other players. But while they're also doing that, while they're also taking care of their families, while they're also enjoying life, they're also committed to their franchise, their team, and their job, that they pay them a lot of money. And see, and last time I checked, nobody gives a shit about Kyrie Irving outside of him dribbling a basketball. Why? Because Kyrie Irving hasn't proven any other quality or gift or talent. I don't want to see him broadcasting. I don't want to see him doing anything. I haven't seen anything else from Kyrie Irving. I don't know what other talents he possesses. But if he doesn't want to take basketball serious, well, then get the hell out of the sport, dude, and go wherever you want. And if you think you can make a living doing the kind of thing you're doing now and making the kind of money, moron, then go ahead and get the hell out. But if I'm Nike, I wouldn't want any part of this clown. If I'm the Nets, as I've said for many years, and I've argued this over and over again, he is not a franchise player, never has been a franchise player. Just because he has franchise ability, he has never proven to have the maturity, the responsibility, the professionalism that it requires to become a leader of a franchise. Like Steph Curry or Jimmy Butler or any of these other guys like a Joel Embiid who take the job seriously, who are willing to sacrifice for their teammates, for their team, for the sport, for the betterment of their team. That's why they play the game. Kyrie Irving does not understand that. That logic does not cross his mind. it doesn't grow, it doesn't go through that temple. Okay. So he's a clown you want no part of. I don't care how gifted he is. I don't care what the good Lord blessed him with, because the good Lord blessed him with a world of talent. But he is a man that you do not use as the face of your franchise. He is way too immature in order to handle those responsibilities. He is not a man. No, he is a child who cannot lead men. That's what Kyrie Irving is. A child, not a man. Men take on responsibility. Men can compartmentalize. Men leave, you know, they actually live up to their responsibilities. He doesn't know how to. He is a child. He has always been a child. He carries himself like a child. That's what Kyrie Irving is. A child that doesn't know how to be a man. That's his problem. So maybe one day when he learns how to be a man, then maybe Nike can take him serious and give him a legitimate contract so he can represent them like a man. And maybe the Nets, maybe they could sign him to a long-term contract one day when he grows up and wants to be a man. But as long as he wants to be a child, he needs to be treated like one. And everyone should be treating Kyrie Irving like the child that he is. Anyway, what else do we have here? All right, we got a bunch of crap going on. All right, whatever. All right. Big O, if Dallas wins it all, does Mark Cuban run for president? I don't know. Do you guys like? I see a lot of stupid shit on the chat board. All right, I'm definitely out of here. There's a lot of crap on that chat board. All right. Anyway, appreciate all of you out there, even you idiots that have nothing to real positive to say on the chat board. Even you morons, we appreciate. We thank Ira Winderman, Alan Poupar, and Marcel Louis Jacques. As always, Sean Stanley is a stud getting it all done. We'll see you guys tomorrow, even some of you idiots on the chat board. Later.